Hashtag the best start to your day.
Joining us on the line is Moti Seligson. He's the spokesman for the Chabad movement and director at media at Chabad.org, Chabad Worldwide. Moti, a very good morning to you, or good evening to you, as it may be, because you are talking to us from New York. How are you?
I'm well, thank God. Good morning.
It's great to speak to you. Before we talk about this this incredible initiative, can you give us a bit of an update as to where New York is in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic? Because you were very, very badly hit at one stage. You came through the peak. What does New York City look like today?
So New York was hit very hard early on in the pandemic. And thank God today the numbers are far lower. There's of the people tested, under 1% are positive tests. Mm-hmm. And also the mortality rate is much lower than it was earlier on. So people are doing better, and there are less people who are sick with COVID.
There was a lot of blame directed towards the religious, the Orthodox community, lots of dissatisfaction with the New York mayor. It was a very unpleasant and difficult time, because not only were people facing the illness and everything that encompassed, but there was also a lot of discontent, a lot of divisiveness. Has that settled down?
Yeah, I believe so. I think there was a double standard early on with mm-hmm. the virus, where most people rightfully were seen as victims of the virus, and somehow if you were Jewish or you were observant Jew, you were a perpetrator in some way. And even though people in these communities in Brooklyn and other areas in New York were hit particularly hard by the virus. In fact, we now believe that the virus spread during Purim. And at that time, the suggestions were, you know, celebrate Purim as usual, go out, meet with friends. That's literally what the mayor of New York was telling people. And, only days later did people realize that the virus was already in New York, was already here, and people were infected with it. There are some areas where 80-90% of the people in the community were infected by the virus, whether they got tests and got positive results or not. Mm-hmm. And we know this because of the antibody rates in some of these communities. And it's actually the Jewish communities that took the lead in donating plasma from the people who are infected by the virus. And more than half of the plasma that was donated in the United States was coming from Orthodox communities, not just in New York, but around the country.
Amazing. Amazing. So, so what was originally blame actually became life-saving.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they're committed to it. You have, when they're collecting plasma, you have hundreds of people donating. And in many cases, they have to turn down some people. And whenever there's availability at a blood bank for a donor, they find someone. It doesn't matter if it's in Detroit, if it's in Philadelphia or in Chicago, wherever it is, they're going to find people from the community that are willing to stand up and Amazing. Donate plasma to help someone else.
Amazing. Has the relationship between New York City mayor and the Orthodox community settled down, or is this likely to be a difficult relationship until the end of his term?
No, I don't think, I don't think it affected the relationship. I think it was he was trying to deal with a situation that he and frankly no one really has control over. But the relationship itself, I think overall is good. He was, before he was mayor, and before he was a public advocate, he was, he worked in government in the areas where there are Jewish communities, and he has a long-standing relationship with many of the communities.
Ah, interesting.
And, yeah.
It's interesting because just viewing it from the outside is often very different to viewing it from the inside. So what we, you know, our access to this information is through media reports, which is obviously very different from people who are living within the communities and working with him.
Yeah, I think, you know, you always get this impression of the controversial when you're reading headlines.
Absolutely.
But he, the relationships, you know, it ebbs and flows, and that was definitely a low point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he recognized as well, you know, what he did that he perhaps could have done much better with.
Right. Let's just talk about this this initiative that you've embarked on, and it's an enormous one. Because of the magnitude, the access to information, the sadness around it. I haven't given our listeners any context whatsoever. Put this in context for us. Tell us what you're doing.
So when COVID hit in the U.S., and this is mid-March, we at Chabad.org sprung into action in terms of providing what we could to our users or to anyone who has an internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of tools and, you know, how do you do a Shabbat at home when you never prepared one on your own before? Mm-hmm. Or how do you do, and eventually how do you do Pesach at home?
Right.
And this year, what's actually the interesting thing is that Pesach is the most observed Jewish holiday in the United States. But most people don't actually prepare for Pesach.
Right.
They just show up. And this year you had more people than ever, perhaps in history, organizing their own Seder and doing it, you know, perhaps with their own children or themselves, as opposed to having three or sometimes four generations together celebrating the Seder together. And so we were providing all these tools and helping people cope with the isolation and everything else, that we were, you know, that everyone was going through. And, while we were doing this, we were thinking about how do we tell the story of the magnitude of what's happening and how communities are coping and how vast this tragedy truly is. It's very hard to, you know, when we're talking about numbers and statistics, and these are really people. Each person is an entire world. And what we started doing was collecting the names, because we knew once a few weeks go by, it's going to be very hard to go back and try finding all those names that were appearing in reports early on of people we've lost to the coronavirus. And we just started, you know, person by person and trying to also, beyond just the names themselves, collect a little information about their lives. The Lubavitcher Rebbe once wrote to a family that was grieving, about the family member that they lost, that the true memorial is not etched in stone. It's not those words that are in the stones, whether it's on the tombstone or anywhere else. It's the living memorial of the people who were inspired by that individual, or their family members that are living on and really bringing light into the world and living, if we're talking about a Jewish family and in the ways of the Torah. And, that's what we were trying to communicate, that this isn't just a memorial where you look at this wall and you get sad, but it's really a memorial where you look at how these people lived and that these are people that really could inspire us and guide us. And when we released the list at the end of last week, there were 1,200 names on that list. Mm. And, it's, you know, working on this for the last 6 months, has been really hard, but also very rewarding as well. As you go through the names and you read about these people's lives, you really see how broad the Jewish community is and how broad Jewish life is.
So the idea is to document each Jew, each person lost to coronavirus.
Right. So we were documenting, we were documenting people in the Jewish community who were lost.
Right.
And that's what we set out to do. There's certainly many, many, many more names than what we have.
The difficulty is, do you always know? I mean, I know that that following your and my conversation, I spoke to the Chevra Kedisha here in South Africa, and we'll put you in contact. You know, at the moment, or certainly in the last month, when we were at our peak, there were three categories. There were those that were very, very clearly had passed away from non-COVID related causes. There were those that had very clearly passed away from COVID. But then there was this unknown group, and what we saw happening here in South Africa is that our numbers of burials were higher in July than almost, I think, than ever before. Even when the Jewish community was at double its size, we never had in any peak month that number of burials, which indicated, of course, that this is that there were many more who had passed away from COVID-19 than were documented.
Yeah, that exact same thing happened in New York. And, there were multiple layers to that. Mm-hmm. So some of it that, you know, we were seeing that there were all kinds of things that are complications of the coronavirus that were affecting people. That's one category. But then you have people who didn't want to go to the hospital for all kinds of other things. And they may have passed as a result of that. And, you know, do you count that as the effects of coronavirus? Yeah. Or is that already a little further afield? We try to stick as much as possible to that first category that you mentioned, that were very clearly, coronavirus, deaths. But, in March and April, when in New York, in some of the Jewish communities, you couldn't walk outside without hearing the sirens of an ambulance. We felt that at that point, we were counting some of the names that went beyond, a diagnosis of coronavirus.
You know, and how are people responding to this? Are they sharing names with you? Are they happy to be on this list? And what ultimately, you know, I guess it's a memorial. I guess it talks about the value of each life. It documents this as part of history.
Right. It really is. It really is. And the response that we're seeing really speaks to that, where over the weekend, I've received just on Twitter from direct messages, dozens of people who reached out where we missed their family member or we didn't have a lot of information about them, where they shared that and they asked us if we could include them in the list. And there were, you know, many people we've also shared this list. This is actually interesting that we've made the list available to all Jewish media outlets that wanted to run with the list, and it appeared in papers across the United States and some Jewish media services. And because we really saw this as an initiative in Jewish unity and Jewish peoplehood, we're all responsible for one another.
Absolutely.
And when one of us are mourning, we're all mourning. And when we're all when one of us are celebrating, we're all celebrating. And, that was another point that we wanted to communicate through this. And on Chabad.org, we've, over the years have really merited to be a central website for the Jewish people. We have about 54 million unique visitors to the website. Yeah. And when we started out on this project, we felt we weren't sure if anyone else was doing anything similar, but We felt that we had this responsibility to do this. We had a responsibility to our users as well as to the Jewish people.
Amazing. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I could continue chatting about this for ages. Just one of our listeners, Clive, says, going back to our original discussion around the mayor of New York, de Blasio, Clive says, you guys are trying to whitewash it. It is called appeasement. Your response, your response to that?
I'd invite Clive to come over and visit, and we could discuss it at length. When he's in New York, over Shabbat dinner.
Over Shabbat dinner. All right, Moti Seligson, thanks for taking the time to speak to you. Absolutely wonderful to catch up with you. Keep doing the amazing work that you are doing. It's